Today, my Dharma talk is Sabbasarvasukha, all the pains, P-A-I-N-T, pains, all the pains, Sabbasarvasukha, Asava, in Pali we call Asava, pains. This sutta comes from Majjhima Nikaya, Sutta number 2. And before we start, let me explain to you what is this pain. There are four pains, asava. Number one, kamasava, the pain of sensual desire. Number two, bhavasava, the pain of existence, attachment to existence. Number three, ditta-sava, the pain of use. Number four, avijja-sava, the pain of ignorance. And why it is called asava in Pali? This asava means, pain means intoxicant of corruption of the mind. And in Pali, it's called asava because it has two meanings. Number one, it means the path oozing from an excess. Number two, it means intoxicants which have been fermented for a long time. And asava, or this pain, which has been fermented in the mental stream of beings for a long time, makes beings forgetful, drunk, and forgetful about their own liberation. So it's called asava. And this sutta, all the things, is spoken by Buddha in Savatthi, in Anattapindika's talk. And Buddha start the discourse. Of course, he talked to the monks. He said, because I say that the destruction of the things is for one who knows and sees, not for one who does not know and see. Who knows and sees what? Wise attention and unwise attention. When one attends unwisely, unarisen pains arise and arisen pains increase. When one attends wisely, unarisen pains do not arise, and arisen pains are abandoned. This pain of corruption of the mind makes beings go round the cycle of birth and death. So it's important to destroy this pain. And to destroy this pain is only for one who knows and who sees. Sees what, knows what. Okay? So Buddha says, wise attention and unwise attention. What is wise attention? Wise attention in Pali we call yoniso manasikara. Unwise attention, ayoniso manasikara. So wise attention. The meaning of wise attention, commentary explains, wise attention is mental avertance, consideration or preoccupation that accords with the truth, namely attention to the impermanence as impermanence, attention to unsatisfactory as unsatisfactory, attention to non-self as non-self. This is called wise Another one, attention into soundness as soundness. This is called wise attention. When you pay, when you attend anything with this wise attention, then unarisen things. If you attend wisely, then unarisen things will not arise. And the arisen things will be abandoned. Okay? And if you attend unwisely or unwise attention, ayomiso manasikara. What's the meaning of unwise attention? Unwise attention is just contrary to the truth. Your consideration or preoccupation that's contrary to the truth. What's the truth? The truth is impermanent, suffering, non-self, soundness, or repulsiveness. This is the truth. But you pay attention wrongly, which is contrary to the truth. You see impermanent as permanent. You see suffering as happiness. And you see non-self as self. You see the soundness of the body as beautiful. So when you pay unwise attention in this way, then unarisen pain arises and arisen pains increase. That's what Buddha said. Then Buddha continued, because there are pains that should be abandoned by seeing. There are seven ways to abandon this pain. Number one, by seeing, by inside knowledge, jnana. Number two, there are pains that should be abandoned by restraint. There are pains, number three, there are pains that should be abandoned by using. Number four, there are pains that should be abandoned by enduring. Number five, there are pains that should be abandoned by avoiding. Number six, there are pains that should be abandoned by removing. Number seven, there are pains that should be abandoned by developing. Bhavana. Okay, so there are seven ways to remove the pain. Okay, let us go one by one. Number one, pains to be abandoned by seeing. Dasana. What pain? Bhikkhus, should be abandoned by seeing. Here, bhikkhus, an untaught ordinary person who has no regard for noble ones and is unskilled and undisciplined in their dharma does not understand what things are fit for attention and what things are unfit for attention. Because you do not understand the noble one's dharma. What is the noble one's dharma? What's the noble one's dharma? Because you are unskillful, you are undisciplined. You do not know the noble one's dharma. That's why, because you do not know the noble one's dharma, then this person does not understand what things are fit for attention. But once you understand the noble one's dharma, you know which things are suitable for your attention. So first you must understand what are the noble one's dharma. Yes? Four noble truths. Noble is four paths. Four noble truths. Noble is four paths. Some more. Dependent origination, cause and effect. Some more. Anicca, dukkha, anatta. Impermanent, suffering, non-self, soundness. Then four elements, five aggregates. All these are the noble ones' dharma. If you do not understand, then you do not know how to pay wise attention towards Noble One's Dhamma. Then you do not understand what things are fit for attention. If you do not understand all this Noble One's Dhamma, then you do not understand what things are fit for attention and what things are unfit for attention. Since that is so, he attends to those things unfit for attention, and he does not attend to those things fit for attention. And because of that, a lot of unwholesome thoughts arise in one's mind. Okay? And Buddha say again, what are the things unfit for attention that he attends to? They are things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen pains of sensual desire arises in him, and the arisen pains of sensual desire increases. Okay. When you attend to certain things that cause your sensual desire to arise, so you must think of it. How you attend to certain things that cause your sensual desire to arise. Yesterday I gave a talk already. How you attend to the things that cause your sensual desire to arise? Yesterday I gave a talk. So now you return to me, give me the reward. Pardon? One of attach your pleasant feeling, one more. And when you pay attention to the perception of beauty, when you see everything beautiful, you pay attention to the perception of beauty. The men see women beautiful, women see the men handsome, good looking. When you pay attention in such a way, perception of beauty, then the unarisen sensual desire arises in you. So, pay attention, the perception of beauty is unfit for you to attend. It's unfit for you to attend to the perception of beauty. This is called unwise attention. We say already that wise attention, when you pay attention to everything is impermanent, non-self, suffering and soundness, then the terms of sensual desire will be abandoned. So now because you attend to things unwisely, then the sensual desire arises in you, and the arisen pains of sensual desire arise in you, and the arisen pains of sensual desire increases. So how to abandon this? Opposite way. Yesterday I've dealt about this one. You pay attention to the opposite of beauty, that is repulsiveness or foulness of the body, or the impermanence of all your pleasant feeling. When you have pleasant feeling, you pay attention to the pleasant feeling as permanent, then your craving increases. Craving is also one type of sensual desire. So your craving increases. So in order to remove or abandon the sensual desire which has arisen, then you have to pay attention to this present feeling as impermanent. That's how you attend wisely. Okay? Then the second one. And the Buddha said that there are things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen pains of being or existence Remember, we have four things. Number two is the tense of existence or becoming. So, the recent tense of being or becoming arise in him, and the recent tense of existence or becoming increases. How you pay attention to things that make the arisen tense of being arises in you? How? You must know how first, only then you know how to avoid, how to pay wise attention. If you do not know, then you think opposite from what the noble person thinks. How? The tense of becoming or tense of existence means that craving attachment to the existence, craving or attachment to life. What makes you crave for life? Because most of beings think life is happiness. Every life, every rebirth is happiness. Rebirth in human world, or in the heaven, or in the material world, or in material world, the thing full of happiness. So when you pay attention to life is happiness, existence is happiness, becoming is happiness, then an arisen tense of existence arises in you, and the arisen tense of existence increases. Then how to attend wisely? Then you will be like Buddha say, birth is suffering. When there's birth, there's aging, sickness, death, separation from who we love, and associate with those you do not like. You have to face this, those you do not like every day. This is also another type of suffering. And cannot get what you want in your life. You get all what you do not want, and what you want you never get. So this is also another type of suffering. So you reflect this one. Birth is suffering, aging suffering, sickness suffering, and so on. Then the terms of beings or terms of existence and becoming will increase, will be abandoned. This is called wise attention. So the basic that you should have some understanding of Noble One's Dharma. If you don't have the understanding of the Noble One's Dharma, you don't know how to think wisely. So if you do not know how to think wisely, what you think only increase your defilement, your attachment, your craving, and so on. So important, first to understand the Noble One's Dharma. Second, we must know how to attend to things wisely, not unwisely. Okay. Then the next one, then the Buddha said that there are things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen tense of ignorance increases. And the unarisen tense of ignorance arises in him, and the arisen tense of ignorance increases. So what are the things that he attends to him that the unarisen tense of ignorance arises? What is this ignorance?
Wrong.
Ignorance and wrong view is two things. Two things. Wrong view is under ignorance. But how you understand what's ignorance? When Buddha said ignorance, what's the meaning of ignorance? Avijja. Ignorance of four noble truths. You must remember this one. When we say ignorance of four noble truths. So what's the four noble truths? Number one, the noble truth of suffering. We have mentioned just now, aging, suffering, sickness, death and so on. And in short, Buddha says, five aggregates of clinging are suffering. So what are these five aggregates of clinging? Materiality, aggregate of clinging. What's materiality of aggregate of clinging? Four elements. Four elements. This, our beings, in this world, we have two types of truth. One is called conventional truth. You say, he, this person, man, woman, these are all conventional truth for easy communication. But in the ultimate sense, this person, this being, this man, woman, are made up of mind and matter, mind and body. And body is also conventional truth. So in the ultimate truth, what is this body? Body is made up by four elements. Earth element, water element, fire element, and wind element. In this body, whatever part you discern, from the top of the head down to the sole, only four elements. Okay, what is this earth element? Hardness. You touch your hand, you feel the hardness. You touch your head, you feel the hardness. All these are earth elements. And water element, flowing. You know, your tears, the tears flowing, saliva flowing, blood flowing in your body, your urine flowing, your sweat flowing. All these are water elements. Then fire element. The fire element keeps your body warm. Without fire element, you will die. We will die. So keep the body warm. The digestive fire keep your food, make your food digested well. These are all fire elements. And the wind element, because of the wind element, you can sit erect. You can walk, you can move your hands freely. All these are wind elements. So apart from these four elements, nothing. We are nothing. Body is only concept. The ultimate truth is only four elements. So these are called materiality aggregate. And this materiality aggregate becomes the object of our attachment. Become the object of our wrong view. We attach to this body as my body. And we identify this body as I. Body as I am the body. Identification. So this materiality, materiality aggregate becomes the object of our attachment and the object of our wrong view. And if we attend unwisely to this body, we say, oh, body is I am the body. Never understand body is just a concept. It's just a concept. What really exists is only four elements. And this four elements, if you can penetrate well this four elements from top of the head down to the soul again and again, you will see a lot of kalapa. We call particles, atomic particles in the whole of the body, and this atomic particles arising and passing away very, very fast. The moment it arises, pass away, how can you cling to something which is constantly arising and passing away? You cannot cling to them. And neither you can identify them as I. If you identify something which is arising fast, arising and passing away as I, it means that you also arising and passing away. Am I right? No. If you identify this arising passing as I, then you yourself also arising and passing away. And because you cannot penetrate into this ultimate reality which is arising and passing away, we identify, we cling to it and we identify it as I, mine, myself. And because of that, the taint of ignorance, the unarisen taint of ignorance arise, and the arisen taint of ignorance increases. Okay, this materiality aggregate. Number two, feeling aggregate. Feeling aggregate also, we have three types of feelings. Number one, pleasant feeling. Number two, unpleasant feeling. Number three, neither unpleasant or pleasant. Neutral feeling means neutral feeling. So we have these three types of feeling. And this thing come from where? Come from where? Come from eye contact, come from ear contact, come from nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and mental contact. Buddha say dependent on contact, feeling arises. And so contact is the cause, feeling is the effect. But we do not understand this. We thought feeling is I. I feel wonderful today. I feel so happy today. I feel so sad today. So we identify feeling as I, feeling as mine. We don't understand feeling is just an effect of the cause. We do not see the relationship of cause and effect. Because of not seeing, we identify feeling as I, mine, myself. So when you get unpleasant feeling, you beat your heart. You get depressed. And when you get very pleasant feeling, you're like flying in the sky. So blissful. But can you maintain that pleasant feeling forever? No. Maybe only 10 minutes after that, you come down from the sky. So this shows that all impermanent. Whether pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, they are impermanent. You can check your daily life. From the moment you wake up until night, you can discern many different types of feeling arise in you. And they are keep on changing. Why they are keep on changing? Because the cause keep on changing. That's why the effect of feeling also keep on changing. If you can understand in this way, then you understand feeling is impermanent. Feeling is not self. If I cling to something which is impermanent, which is not self, I end up in suffering. So in order to let go of this suffering, whenever feeling arises, whether pleasant or unpleasant, you just contemplate it as impermanent, cause and effect, non-self, nature. Then at this moment, you are free from suffering. This is how we attend wisely. If you attend unwisely, feeling as I, mind myself, then the taint of ignorance increase in you. And you cannot free yourself from suffering. Okay? Number three, aggregate is what? Perception aggregate. Perception. What's perception? Perception has the characteristic of perceive the quality of the object. So that next time it can recognize what he formerly perceived. For example, when the first time you see the bird flying in the sky, so perception will make a mark. Bird has two wings flying in the sky. So next time when this person sees the bird again, then the perception is only a mental factor. The perception will arise, recognize this is bird. So in a round of rebirth, we always perceive what is right as wrong. What is wrong as right. We always perceive wrongly. So we have one perception we call vipalasa, sanya vipalasa, perverted perception. So in the round of rebirth, because the ignorance, still we have latent defilement of ignorance still in our mental stream. And this latent defilement of ignorance cover the truth, so that we cannot see things as they really are. And because of that, our perception becomes perverted perception. We always perceive things wrongly. We perceive impermanent as permanent. We perceive suffering as happiness. We perceive non-self as self. We perceive soundness as beauty. And because of this wrong perception, then, and we do not understand correctly, then we pay attention unwisely, that cause the pain of ignorance to arise, and the unreason pain of ignorance increases. So this is called perception, aggregate. And we also identify what we perceive with craving, because you perceive it as happiness, as permanence, then craving arises. So, and this perception becomes the object of our clinging and the object of our view. We also identify perception as I, as mine. Perception is only a mental factor. Just like feeling is also a mental factor. Okay. Number four, aggregate is what? Formation aggregate. What is formation aggregate? All your emotions, for example, anger, greed, jealousy, conceit, wrong view, all these are called mental formation. The chief of mental formation is volition. Volition. You have will to do something good, something bad. This is called formation. And this formation is also become the aggregate of clinging. We cling to our anger as I. And we identify our anger as I. We cling to our greed as mine. When greed or lust arise in you, we start to crave for it. So we cling to our greed as mine. And we cling to the anger as myself, or the conceit, the pride, the covetousness as myself. And because of that, we do not pay wisely, we pay unwise attention to this formation aggregate, then the taint of ignorance arises. Okay, the last one, consciousness aggregate. We have six types of consciousness. Eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, and mental mind consciousness. So eye consciousness arises when visible object impinges eye sensitivity, then eye consciousness arises seeing that object, then pass away. And nose, when a sound impinges the ear sensitivity, then ear consciousness arises seeing, hearing that sound, then pass away. So just cause and effect, only cause and effect. But we don't understand this. We say that I see, I hear, I smell, I taste, I touch, I think. Everything is I. So we identify all types of consciousness as I, mine, myself. When you pay attention unwisely in this way, how can you free yourself from the pains of ignorance? You can't see yourself from the pain of ignorance. You can't see yourself from the suffering. So you got to pay wise attention. Eye consciousness is only a consciousness because of the causes, the impingement of the visible object. So the eye sensitivity, eye consciousness arises. Seeing the object, that's all. If you can attend in such a way, your wisdom grows. Okay. So these five aggregates of clinging are the truth of suffering. But if we do not pay wise attention, these five aggregates are the truth of suffering, then we pay unwise attention. We think that these five aggregates are the truth of happiness. Then the taint of ignorance arises. Okay, so this is number one, number two of suffering. Number two, what's the cause for this suffering? What's the origin of this number two of suffering? Attachment, yes. Craving. Craving. You must learn by heart the four noble truths. Buddha said, we are in this round of rebirth. We cannot escape from the round of rebirth. You and I remain wander in this round of rebirth. Why? Why? And the Buddha said, because we cannot penetrate into this four noble truths. That's why you and I still wander in the round of rebirth, the cycle of birth and death endlessly. So it's very important to understand four noble truths. If you want to understand the true teaching of the Buddha. So we have discussed number one, the noble truth of suffering. Now number two, the origin of the truth of suffering is craving. We have three types of craving. Number one, craving for sensual pleasures, for six sensual pleasures: visible objects, sound, smell, taste, touch, and mental objects. And we also crave for existence, whatever existence. We don't want to die. We don't want to become arahant. We want to be born again and again. We crave for existence. Or another, this is the second craving. The third craving, craving for annihilation. After that, nothing remains. This associated with wrong view. After that, nothing remains. This is called the view of annihilation, the extreme view. Okay. And if you pay attention wisely, craving is the cause of suffering. Then you will not entertain your craving. But if you pay attention unwisely, you think craving gives you happiness. Only because craving, because this enjoyment in the craving, there is some satisfaction in the craving. So you like it. So if you pay attention that craving gives you satisfaction, craving gives you enjoyment, then the taint of sensual pleasures, the taint of sensual desire, the taint of ignorance increase in you. But if you can pay attention wisely, craving causes suffering. When there's craving, there's suffering. Why? Because craving is also impermanent. For example, you eat chocolate cake. First you taste the chocolate cake. Wow, wonderful. So much pleasant feeling. Then you start to crave. You eat more. You eat more than 10. Then you end up in suffering. You end up in suffering. That's why, first it gives you suffering. First craving gives you satisfaction, enjoyment. But that enjoyment, that satisfaction never last. It turns. When it turns, then suffering follows. So if you can pay attention in this way, then the taint of sensuality, the taint of ignorance will be abandoned. Okay. Then the third noble truth. What's the third noble truth? The cessation of the truth of suffering. What's the cessation of the truth of suffering? No. Nibbana, okay. The equal part is the path leading. The path leading to the cessation. Now, the third, the cessation of suffering, Nibbana. But Nibbana is very abstract. You know what's Nibbana? Nibbana is the extinction of that very craving. Craving itself is the cause of suffering. So the extinction of that very craving itself is Nibbana. When that craving ceases, it's happiness. This is called Nibbana. So Nibbana means the extinction of that very craving. Then number fourth truth is the path leading to the cessation of suffering, which is Noble Eightfold Path. The Noble Eightfold Path, number one, right view. What's right view? Understanding the four noble truths is right view. Right thought. There are three types of right thought. The thought of renunciation, the thought of non-evil, the thought of non-cruelty. Or another explanation, application of the thought towards this Noble Eightfold Path is also called right thought. This tool comprises wisdom training. Then number three, right speech, right action, right livelihood. This three comprises morality training. And number six, right effort. Number seven, right mindfulness. And number eight, right concentration. These three comprises concentration training. There are four types of right effort. But if I have to explain, it takes very long time. Next time, if we have chance, we will explain. So this Noble Eightfold Path is the only path leading to the cessation of suffering. So if you aim, if you have noble aim to cease your suffering, you must check the way you practice. You must check the way you practice whether contains this Noble Eightfold Path or not. You check yourself so that you will not be misled to other path. So every day you check, okay, do I have this right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration or not? Or which one is lacking in you? Then you check yourself, then you fill up the gaps. Then if you are sure you have this eight factors of Noble Eightfold Path, then you are bound to reach your goal if you continue. Okay. So this ignorance means not knowing this noble not knowing this four noble truths. Because of not knowing this four noble truths, then you do not know how to. You do not understand what things are fit for your attention. These four noble truths are fit for your attention, but you do not know. So then you pay unwise attention, then the taint of ignorance arises in you. Okay, the last one, the taint of wrong view. These are the things fit for attention that he does not attend to. By attending to things unfit for attention and by not attending to things fit for attention, both unarisen pains arise in him and arisen pains increase. This is how he attends wisely. Now we come to the tenth of view. This is how he attends unwisely. Was I in the past? Was I not in the past? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what did I become in the past? Shall I be in the future? Shall I not be in the future? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be in the future? Having been what shall I become in the future? Or else he is inwardly perplexed about the present thus. Am I? Am I not? What am I? How am I? Where has this being come from? Where will it go? When he attends unwisely in this way, one of six views arises in him. The view, number one, self exists for me, arises in him as true and established. Or the view, number two, no self exists for me, arises in him as true and established. Or the view, I perceive self with self. Number three, arises in him as true and established. Or the view, number four, I perceive not self with self, arises in him as true and established. Or the view, number five, I perceive self with not self, arises in him as true and established. Or else he has some such view as this. If this self of mine that speaks and feels and experiences here and there the result of good and bad actions, but this self of mine is permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change, and it will endure as long as eternity. This speculative view, bhikkhus, is called the ticket of views, the wilderness of views, the contortion of views, the vacillation of views, the fetter of views. Fettered by the fetter of views, the untaught ordinary person is not free from birth, aging, and death, from sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. He is not free from suffering, I say. So all these six types of view come from this personality view or identity view, the view of self. Whether the self exists or not, the past exists or not. So what he thinks only thinks of self. This is called identity view. And most of us, even the Buddhists, we still think that it is the self of mind that speaks and feels and experiences here and there the result of good and bad actions. And this self of mind is permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change. Even Buddhists also think in this way. This is called eternalism, eternalist view. Eternalist view also based on the identity view. And because of this identity view, Buddha says, our head always tending towards the four woeful states. Why we cannot get out from falling into four woeful states? Because of this identity view. We identify everything as I, mine, myself. And the Buddha says, if you, and this view are settled by this view, the untaught ordinary person cannot flee from birth, aging, sickness, death, cannot flee from all suffering. Okay, I think today I should stop here. Any questions? No questions. Difficult to understand? Difficult to understand. Or too easy to understand? No questions. No doubt. Yes, yes.
How is that the community that has a child experience to look on the path? How do people have a listen to the way you have to look at it and think about it?
You can check yourself. Do you understand Four Noble Truths correctly? It's a path leading towards the detachment of the five aggregates of clinging. Of when you're practicing, when you keep on practicing, and your identification of self becomes stronger and stronger, then you know you are not in the right path. You know. And when you practice this Dhamma, your craving becomes stronger, anger becomes stronger, then you know something wrong already. You know, then you check. Number 8 for path, right view first. Right view, what's right view? Four number 2, off, understand impermanent, unsatisfactory and non-self. So if you feel that, what you see, you know, before you come to practice, the way you look at the world is all happiness, all, you know, permanent, all self. But now after practicing for some time, the perception of impermanent, non-self and suffering increases. Then you know you are in the right track. And also you check your morality, whether your verbal, you restrain from the four wrong verbal speech or not. Or your action, is it, you know, accord with what the Buddha says or not? You check yourself. And your mindfulness, is it increases? Or you always forgetful, even practice 10 years also remain forgetful, then your mindfulness is not. You don't have the right mindfulness yet. And your concentration, you check whether you can concentrate well or not. Even if you can concentrate better than before, then you are in the right track. So you can check each factor one by one. Okay. It's very important to check because only the right path leads you to the right destination. Okay, any other questions? Yes? I think attachment or loving kindness is different things. In Buddha's teaching, we have loving kindness, metta. You know, the metta, the attitude of the metta, you just wish your daughter, your son to be well and happy. You are not trying to control them in whatever ways, or want them to follow you 100%, whatever way you like. No, you just wish them well and happy. But you are not possessive of him. He belongs to me. All the time he must follow what I say. He belongs to me. That type of attachment causes you suffering and causes her suffering. You know? You perform your duty as mother, look after him. But you should not, you know, try to possess him or think that he belongs to you all the time. Gradually you understand that metta and attachment is completely different things. Okay. So, but in the teaching of Buddha, we say that the son and daughter only at this moment become is my son and daughter. No? In the past life, he is not my son and daughter. In the future also he will not be my son and daughter. So why should I get attached? Just wish him well, happy, that's all. Don't attach too much. Huh? That attachment causes suffering. If you do want suffering, you try not to attach. Okay, no more questions. Then we stop here. Thank you.
Then I'd like to continue my talk on all the things. And Buddha said there are 7 ways to overcome or to destroy all the things. And we have discussed the 3rd way by way of seeing. And for those who are untaught words, worthy beings, who are still in love for a training and is unskilled and undisciplined in their dharma, do not understand what things are fit for attention and what things are unfit for attention. Things that is told, he attends to those things unfit for attention. That cause the 4 pains to arise. Number 1, the pains of sensual pleasures. Number 2, the pains of existence or becoming. Number 3, the pains of ignorance. And number 4, the pains of view. So we have discussed all these 4 things. When untrustworthy beings are paid attention, I do not understand what things are paid for attention, so that they pay attention to those things unfit for attention that cause these 4 things to arise. Then, what are the things fit for attention? Then the Buddha says, some bhikkhu, a well-taught noble disciple who has regard for noble ones and is skilled and disciplined in their dharma, who has regard for true men and is skilled and disciplined in their dharma, understands what things are fit for attention and what things are unfit for attention. Since that so, he does not attend to those things unfit for attention, then he attends to those things fit for attention. So now the question, what are those things fit for attention? So the Buddha says, he attends wisely. This is suffering, dukkha. He attends wisely, this is the origin of suffering. He attends wisely, this is the cessation of suffering. And he attends wisely, this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. So when he attends wisely in this way, 3 factors are abundant in him. Personality view, doubt, and adherence to rules and observance. So these are 4 the things that should be abandoned by humans. Okay. Now how we attend wisely to this suffering? We have already explained in my previous talk what is suffering, what is the noble truth of suffering, the 5 aggregates of training. The 5 aggregates of clinging are the fruit of the suffering. Then, what is the origin of suffering? Craving. We have already discussed. There are 3 types of craving. Craving for sensual pleasure, craving for existence, and craving for non-existence. So, this food, the first first noble truth and the second noble truth. These two are the object of enlightenment. These two things, this first noble truth and second noble truth, are the object of enlightenment. How? Let me give an example. And a dreamer visible form. It is simple. Eye sensitivity. Then eye consciousness arises during that form. And the coming of this three visible form, eye sensitivity and eye consciousness. The coming of this three is called eye contact. Eye contact. Then, owing to the dependent on eye contact, pleasant feeling arises. Because the object is agreeable form. So it's a very pleasing form. Very lovable form. Then, it causes pleasant eye contact. Depend on the pleasant eye contact, pleasant feeling arises. And because of the pleasant feeling, then followed by what? Usually pleasant feeling gives rise to what? Gives rise to attachment. Very easy to understand. Gives rise to attachment. Then at this time, this person is inflamed by love for the eye, for the form, and for the eye consciousness, and for the eye contact, and for the pleasant feeling that arises with eye contact as condition. And when one is alive, inflamed by love, infatuated, contemplating gratification, enjoyment, then the five stages of clinging are built up for oneself in the future. In the future, because of the longing, the attachment. Any mental, the top mental karma, and every karma, whether bodily, physically or mentally, one performs leaves behind karmic potency, karmic force that will cause a future five aggregates of clinging to arise again in the future. And this cause of five aggregates of clinging are built up for oneself in the future. You mean the cycle of birth and death will continue. And one craving, because craving for a certain feeling, this craving which brings renewal of being or existence, is accompanied by delight and love, and delight in birth and death increases. One's bodily, because of that craving, one's bodily and mental struggles increase. One's bodily and mental torment increase, and one experiences bodily and mental suffering. So this is suffering. So how to contemplate? Now you are sitting, meditation. So every time when the sixth sense object and the sixth sense thought, the moment you get attached to it, the suffering God has explained does not follow until next life. So at this moment, how to overcome your suffering? So at this moment, we have to contemplate eye sensitivity is impermanent. How eye sensitivity is impermanent? as I have said, the body is composed of four elements. And these four elements, as you keep on scanning the body, you will find your body is made up by millions of particles. And these particles are rising and passing away. In the eyes also, millions of particles are rising and passing away. And that's one sensitive part of the body, of the eye, which is very sensitive towards the light. This is called eye sensitivity. So when you return this eye sensitivity, you also feel that you also see with your inside mind this eye sensitivity rising and passing away, rising and passing away. So how you understand eye sensitivity is impermanent. So also whisper form, you pay attention to the whisper form. Whisper form is also made up by four elements. They are also arising and passing away. So this workout is also impermanent. Then I can have consciousness arising, seeing that this workout then pass away. Another consciousness arises again, then pass away. Another consciousness arises and pass away. So I consciousness also impermanent. Then I contact also impermanent. And depending on the I contact, present feeling arises. If you can contemplate this present feeling, look at it, observe this present feeling, then identify with it, then you will see this present feeling also arises and passing away. And why it arises? Because of eye contact in the eye. It's just the effect of the thought. So if you can contemplate in this way, the craving will not follow the present feeling. When the craving does not follow the pleasant feeling, then craving will not arise. When craving ceases, then existence also ceases. When existence ceases, birth will not arise. When there's no birth, there's no aging, sickness and death. Fast. No lamentation, no sorrow, no pain, that teaches the fullness of suffering according to the dependent policy. But this is called temporary or momentary cessation. It's only momentary cessation, not a final, not a complete cessation, which is realized only by Arahant past life. So this is how, this is why I say that the suffering and the origin of the suffering, these two are the object of vipassana. So whenever the sixteenth of that contact to the sixteenth door, it's a time for you to contemplate. If you want to get it from that very suffering, from the sixteenth contact. If you want to stop your craving moment to moment, momentary, then this is how you start. Every time when the sixteenth object contact the sixteenth spaces, you start to contemplate in permanent suffering non-stop. Only by this way, you stop the craving. When craving stops, then there's no craving. When craving stops, there's no existence. When there's no existence, there's no birth. There's no aging, sickness and death. So this is called moment-to-moment cessation. Momentary cessation. Then, this is the situation of suffering. That's what I say. This is the situation. There are two types of cessation, momentary cessation and complete cessation, final cessation. So if you call it, if you contemplate whatever phenomena arise, then it does not lead to craving, it's called momentary cessation. Only by momentary cessation, then finally you reach complete cessation. You even cannot contemplate moment to moment, but you aim for complete cessation. How can you do? You cannot. They said the cessation is moment to moment cessation. Okay, then, how about this? Buddha is called the cessation of suffering. Then he attempts wisely, gives away, leading to the cessation of suffering. So when he contemplates in this way, when he contemplates in this way, impermanence, suffering, oneself of I can see visible form, I contact, feeling born of I contact. If he can contemplate in this way, then he abides uninflamed by love, unfettered, uninsatiated. He contemplating the danger of the sense pressure. Then the five aggregates affected by training are diminished for oneself in the future. And while training, which brings renewal of seeing, is accompanied by delight and love, and delight in this or that is abandoned. Once bodily and mental struggles are abandoned, once bodily and mental torments are abandoned, and one experiences bodily and mental stresses. And next one, what's important now? The view of a person such as this is right view. Now we are talking about the four noble equal parts. So if you can contemplate in this way, the view of a person such as this is called right view. And his intention is right intention. His effort is right effort. His mindfulness is right mindfulness. And his concentration is right concentration. But his bodily action, his verbal action, and his livelihood has already been well purified earlier. I mean that before you come to practice, you have really purified your bodily bad conduct. You have purified your body, your verbal action, and your livelihood. These things have already purified. That this noble equal path comes to fulfillment in him by development. So it is the attempt, this person attempts wisely in such a way to reach the four noble truths. Then finally, he became Sotapanna. So when he attends wisely in this way, the three factors are abandoned in him. Number one, personality view. He no more identifies five aggregates as I, mine, myself. After he abandoned the personality view. And he also abandoned doubt. Doubt towards the truth again. And also he abandons the adherence to rules and observance. He does not cling to any other rules, reasons. He only directs his mind towards noble eightfold path. So he became, once he abandoned the three factors, he became three emperor. So these are all the things that should be abandoned by seeing. Seeing with unified mind. Okay, is it clear? Clear? Okay, good. Now you go to the second one, Afterwards, okay. Now you go to the second one, things to be abandoned by restraining. First, tends to be abandoned by seeing with inside mind. Now we come to tends to be abandoned by resting. Okay. What tends, bhikkhu, to be abandoned by resting? Here a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, abides in the eyes of helping that sin. Watching that person and fever might arise in one who abides with the eyes of helping unrested. What did I mean by eyes of helping unrested? So when seeing a form, when seeing a visible form with the eyes, if a person thrust at his spine and his features, I mean that first you see, oh, beautiful woman, so he thrust at this spine. Then followed by detail. Oh, his eye, her eye is so beautiful, her eyebrow like a half moon or a new moon, as a cheek so rosy and so on. He starts to go into the detail. Then what will arise in that? What will arise in the mind? Craving. The last craving will arise in the mind. This is called unrested in the eye. Without resting, eyes for something unrested. When I see a form, a person grasps the sign and the features in his face. Then, after that, delight arises in him. Delight in this visible form arises. When the delight arises, accompanied by pleasant feelings, then craving arises. Lastly, thoughts arises. So it's called unresting in the eye. And during Buddha's time, there was a monk called Wangyusa. It's written in Wangyusa, Sanyusa. Wangyusa. Newly ordained, a young man, newly ordained man. One day he went for an exam. Without dabbing his eyes for something, he left his eyes for something unrestrained. So when he caught sight with a woman, then his mind was invaded by strong love. So after coming from Amsterdam, he cannot meditate at all. His mind is infected by the lust. So he cannot meditate, he becomes so restless. His body and mind become unstable. So he is suffering both for bodily and mentally. This is called unrestrained in eye faculty. And how about the ear faculty? Ear faculty. During Buddha's time, there was Buddha's half cousin. One day, Buddha's half cousin called Nanda. In his waving way, the very day he wanted to get married, in that day, the Buddha appeared in his house. He was king. So Buddha appeared in his house. On that very day, wedding day. So Buddha gave him his bowl. So out of respect for the Buddha, his half brother called Nanda, out of respect and fear of Buddha, he took the bowl. Then Buddha came back. So he also followed because the bowl is in his hand. So out of respect for the Buddha, he followed the Buddha. Then his bride called him, oh my dear, please come back quickly, please come back quickly. Then he heard this, his bride calling him, but out of the respect of the Buddha, he didn't want to, stop, to follow the Buddha back to the monastery. Then Buddha told him, do you want to ordain? He began to come out. In his mind, of course, he didn't want. He wanted to get married. But how often is it for the Buddha to bring us to say no? So he keep calling him consent. Huh? So Buddha ordained him at the same day. Huh? Ordained him. But this son, my dear old sister, quickly, this son keep on asking his ears, not lingering on his mind, because he left his eyes already unrestrained, and because he didn't restrain his ears already. So this son always linger on his mind. So he cannot meditate at all. No? His discontent cannot meditate at all. So restless. Buddha knew his mind. So Buddha one day, Buddha went to him. So, okay, Nanda, let us go have a walk. Huh? So they walk around in the forest. So in the journey, they saw a very ugly female monkey in the forest. So the Nanda caught sight of this very ugly female monkey. Then after that, Buddha said, do you want to go to heaven to see the beautiful deity? How do you call it in English? Deity? Angel. Okay. So then, Nanda said, sure, of course. So Buddha used his psychic power. Buddha has six types of psychic power. Huh? So Buddha used his supernatural power and brought him to the heaven. So Nanda saw so many beautiful places, so many beautiful angels. And he was so excited. Then Buddha asked him, okay, please compare this angel with your wife, your bride. Who is more beautiful? Then the Nanda said, compare this angel with my bride. My bride is like that ugly female monkey. Then the Buddha asked him, do you want to get one of these beautiful angels? Then the Buddha, because Nanda is very passionate in nature, right? Very passionate being. So he said, of course I want. Okay. Then Buddha said, okay, if you take it apart in your meditation, you know, as a result I will give you one of these beautiful angels, right? Then Nanda was so excited. From that onward, he practiced very hard in his meditation. And all the monks and the nuns spread out. Huh? All the monks knew that Nanda practiced very hard because of wanting to get a beautiful angel. Then everybody laughed at him. He was so ashamed. He feels so shameful, you know, because all his fellow monks laughed at him. He feels so sinful, then he left the crowd and meditated in solitude. Meditated five diligently very hard, and finally he achieved sanhansi. Once he achieved sanhansi enough, he has no more love. So, not how many angels come to you, your mind will never expand more. So once he became a man, he has destroyed all his wrath, destroyed all the suffering. So this story shows that when you let when you do not practice the restraint with the or you abide with the ears of something unrestrained, then all the defilements, corruptions of the mind will invade your mind. All the four things will overwhelm you. This is what I say, huh? When walking, vexation and fever might arise in one who abides with the eyes of body and restraint. There are no things, vexation or fever in one who abides with the eyes of body and restraint. Okay. Now, how to abide? Abide with the eyes of body restraint. How? There are two ways. Buddha gives a simile in the Sangha Nisaya. The simile of purpose. He says one way by guarding your sixth sense door. Close your sixth sense door. But close means doesn't mean you don't want to see anything, you don't want to hear anything, you don't want to see anything. Huh? Doesn't mean like that. Then how? Huh? Okay, Buddha said a few minutes. He said it's one way, a purpose, searching for food along the river bank. And at the same time, a seeker also went searching for food. So when the seeker saw a seeker, then he quickly saw in his neck and limbs and took silent here. And the seeker saw this person, then he climbed to his skin close by and he thinks, when this person extend his limbs and neck, then I will ask it, pull out and stick them on the spot. But the person keep on drawing in his limbs and neck without doing anything. So after some time, the person lost interest and then went away. So this simile told us you have to guard your five sense door, draw in, don't extend your eyes or body, your ears, don't extend. Try not to extend by way of keeping your mind on a meditation subject. If you keep your mind on one meditation subject, then when you see somebody, you cannot see clearly. When you hear something, because for example you practice the anapana, you concentrate on the breath. Even by talking with others, you still concentrate on the breath, then you cannot hear very clearly, you cannot see people's face clearly, so you will not look at the sound or the details of this face when the lungs will not arise. Or you keep, let's say, skeleton meditation. You keep skeleton meditation, keep one object in your mind all the time. So when you see a female speaker, then because keeping the skeleton object in your mind, so when you see this female speaker, you only see skeleton. You will not see these, you know, beautiful eyes, nose, ear, and so on. I do it and see that. When I was in Malaysia, my friend brought this friend who is minister of the country. So he told me that he has one difficulty, he has one problem. He said that as a minister, he very often he went to barber shop to cut his hair. So he told me in the barber shop there are so many hair styles. They are wearing very short skirts, moving around in front of him. He says my mind was invaded by strong love. When my eyes come to contact with all these beautiful hair styles moving around in front of him. Now my mind is invaded. My strong love. So every time I went for my hair cutting, my manager is full of suffering. And because he was a devoted Hindu, so he didn't want to commit family sector and come back. So he told his problem to me. I said, okay, I teach you skeleton meditation. So you teach visualize skeleton. How you teach you buy one skeleton, keep in your heart, it's keep in your house. And every day you pay attention to this skeleton. Until it becomes very clear in your mind. It becomes a mental image, mental object. When you close eyes, it will appear when you keep on seeing a skeleton. This is the way to develop concentration. So, and I never think that he will follow my instructions. Because he's a minister so busy in his life. So after 2 years, I met him again. And he said, "Teacher, the method you taught me to work so wonderfully, you know? Because now every day I went to, now when I went to this father's church, you know, all these pastors, these moons in front of me, I only see skeleton. I only see skeleton moons around. My mind is so stable. The last mirror invested my mind in life. I'm so happy. Then he asked any other method or not. He was so interested, so he wanted to teach him other methods first. But unfortunately, I didn't have time at that time. So this is the way, this contrasting the five senses. So when you keep your mind at a single meditation subject, your eye, your ear, your nose, your tongue, your body are closed temporarily. So when you look at somebody, so it is pretty skeleton, when you talk to somebody, you see a key, you only see a skeleton. So this is what is happening in one of the mind called Sita. Sita's mind in Sri Lanka, he always practices skeleton meditation. So one day, he practices internally and externally. Looks at his body as a skeleton as well as external body as a skeleton. So one day he went walking the bus. Then on the way he met this one beautiful lady. This lady started calling with her husband. So he came around. Then when this lady saw this man called Sita, this lady laughed. Sometimes the loving heart of females can be very attractive. So by when this man listened to this loving heart, he looked up. He locked up just saw the teeth. And teeth is part of the skeleton. So when he locked up, because his mind is on contemplating skeleton, so when he locked up, he only saw the skeleton. He didn't see the whole human teacher, only saw the skeleton. So he simply contemplates external skeleton, then come into internal skeleton. Then from here, he moved to the Vipassana. He moved to Vipassana and he obtained Paramahansa sit on the spot. So this is called having five senses. Okay? So when a person abides with the eyes of body, the skin, then no reflection, no defilement can arise in his mind. Then reflecting rightly, he abides with the ear faculty, the skin. With the nose faculty, the skin. With the tongue faculty, the skin. And with the body faculty, the skin. With the mind faculty, the skin. While things are four types of things, vexation and fear might arise in one who abides with the faculties and vexation. There are no any vexation or fear in one, feverian defilement, in one who abides with the faculties and vexation. These are four the things that should be abandoned by vexation. Now we come to the third one. Pain should be abandoned by using. Here using, there are four. One, you group. So actually, these four is meant for, these four are meant for mind. But I think it's applicable for the person as well. Number one is food, or the food, the clothing you wear. Number two is food to eat. Number three is a dwelling place, your house. Number four is a medicine. So Buddha says, what pain bhikkhus to be abandoned by using? Here a bhikkhu respecting wisely uses the rope only for protection from cold. For protection from heat. for protection from contacting that light, mosquitoes, winds, the sun, and creeping things, and only for the purpose of concealing the private part of the body. So then we, as a monk and nun, when we wear our robes, we usually reflect wisely in such a way. So we monk and nun always have same robe all the time, same color, same robe all the time. This leads to what? This leads to contentment. Contentment is very important in holy life. Because Buddha says, contentment is greater wealth. Greater wealth is contentment. But for lay person, you know, you can see, you know, the time you spend for your clothing, maybe you know how many you spend. So the time you spend, the money you spend, sometimes you wear your clothing not for the protection from cold or heat or from mosquito or wind, but you wear your clothing because of the protection. Sometimes, because of the protection. So the change of danger invades your mind because you wear the protection, not for protection of the cold, heat, the sun, or to cover the private part of the body. So if a lay person also can reflect wisely when wearing your clothing, he also helps you to abandon the pain of sinful senses. So you will not chase after the person and so on. But you will not buy more than necessary. I think many lay persons have more than necessary. More than necessary will become a burden to you. It takes away a lot of time and money as well. So the second one, reflecting wisely, uses unfood, neither for amusement nor for intoxication, nor for the sake of physical beauty and attractiveness, but only for the endurance and continuing of this body, for ending discomfort, and for assisting the holy life, considering that I said, terminate all feelings without arousing new feelings, and I shall be healthy and blameless and flourishing comfort. So he said that he eats. He eats this one, not for beauty, not for amusement, not for enjoyment, but to continue this body. Because the body needs food. So as we overcome our hunger. And to reflect that the new feeling will not arise due to overeating. So that he can abide in comfort and continue his practice. So it is for monks. But I think for lay person, it's also applicable for lay person. So if you, whenever you sit, if you can contemplate, taking this food is for, to assist this body so that you can live healthy, have a better life, then you will not overeat. In America, there are so many people overeating. So we have very big size. Because we have no contentment in this way. They eat for fun. They eat for craving. They eat for craving, they eat for fun. So as a result, the body becomes out of shape. When the chain of sensor is higher, when they eat for craving, then the craving increases again. Every time you eat, increases again and again, and then craving, when craving increases, craving also increases. So that advises us to contemplate while he was practicing the truth. And he muttered, reflecting wisely, he uses the resting place only for protection from cold, for protection from heat, for protection from contact with sunlight, mosquitoes, wind, sun, and sleeping things, and only for the purpose of warding off the perils, the danger of sunlight, and for enjoying solitude. And the use of the heat of the wind. Because you are not so irritated with education. You are not satisfied with your work. You are not satisfied with your food. You are not satisfied with your boring place. You cannot get concentration at all. So if we can attend wisely, reflect wisely. Then enough for us to sleep. Then your mind gets very contented. When your mind gets contented, your mind settles down. When your mind settles down, you develop concentration. But in the meantime, in this person's house, usually they change the house from small, bigger house. Do you really need such a big house? You must ask yourself, do you really need such a big house? What a burden is the big house for you? Because it cut your plan. So many things to do, all your precious time. All your precious time are spent to maintain the house. So you have to ask yourself, worth it or not? Why not you spend all your precious time for meditation, for studying the Buddha's teachings, for your self-improvement, for the better, and so on. So, when you go back home, change your house to the smaller one. Okay. The last one, reflecting wisely, uses the meditation to teach it, only for protection from the reason assisting beings and for the ministry of good health. So, I'm taking meditation also. I took this meditation because to show our sickness and to maintain the good health. There's a purpose of it. And if you reject wisely, then you will not overuse it. And your mind will get contented to what you have. While pain, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not use the repeated path, they are now pain, vexation, or fever in one who uses them back. These are called the things that should be abandoned by reason. Okay. So now we have finished three. Abandoned things should be abandoned by feeling. Things should be abandoned by resting. And the things should be abandoned by using. Okay. I think that's all for today. Another 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Really? Do you want to ask questions?
This was a question about the
The underlying of love is there. If you have a pleasant feeling, usually cravings will follow. Unless you can contemplate pleasant feelings as impermanent, not self-suffering. If you can contemplate in this way, when the pleasant feeling ceases, then the craving will follow. But if you do not contemplate at all, then as a result, you have to be dependent on feeling the craving arises. This is a common way of the mind, habitual pattern of the mind to react in this way. Sometimes craving arises and I didn't even know. Mind is very strong and very subtle. So when you enjoy, you don't even know this is craving. That is even worse. So first mindfulness must know craving has arisen. Then wisdom connected into this compassion for this present feeling or craving as impermanent mind self suffering. Only then you can see the pain of the feeling towards the craving. If you do not contemplate at all, sure, Buddha says, sure, craving will follow you and will follow your present feeling. Of course. Even Arahant, I think in the interview I told you, even Arahant has experiencing pleasant feelings and unpleasant feelings. But when you experience pleasant feelings, you know pleasant feelings as pleasant feelings. It's not I, mine, myself, it's impermanent. It's suffering. But whatever feeling is suffering. Why? Only to its pain. All formations are impermanent, Buddha says. So feeling also changes very fast. So Buddha also experienced unpleasant feelings and pleasant feelings, but he did not cling to the pleasant feeling and he did not reject the unpleasant feelings. Buddha only knows them as they really are, that's all. Any other questions? Depend on feeling, craving arises. Depend on craving, clinging arises. So any other question? Aloha? No question. Yes.
You were asking about the condition and the timing.
Yes.
I think everyone has heard that the condition is coming back.
Happiness. Eradicate the happiness.
Yeah.
No, I didn't say that. That is not accept. Not eradicate. Not accept to it. Not accept to happiness. No question. Okay, no question will stop you.
Today, I was trying to finish my talk on all the things. And tomorrow, I will give you another profound talk on dependent origination. So, yesterday we had discussed the three ways to overcome the pain. Now we go to the fourth one. The pain to be abandoned by enduring. what came before should be abandoned by enduring. Here a bhikkhu is acting wisely, bears cold and heat, hunger and thirst, and contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, the sun, and creeping things. He endures ear-spoken, unwelcome words, and arisen bodily feelings that are painful, wrestling, sharp, piercing, disagreeable, distressing, and menacing to life. While pain, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not endure fasting, there are no pain, vexation, or fever in one who endures them. These are called the things that should be abandoned by enduring. So we must endure all the cold and heat. Without enduring, then the defilement or the anger irritation may arise in our mind. I remember there was an occasion while I was in forest refuge, Massachusetts, during my 2 months retreat. At that time, the weather is so cold, and my skin, because of cold weather, my skin becomes cracked. If I can apply some moisturizer or lotion, then it will be fine. But I didn't have the lotion with me, and I didn't have the money as well. So what can I do? Just endure. I endure the pain because of the cut. So dry, the skin cut. So the only way is to endure it. And I cannot ask someone because they do not invite me. Dear sister, what do you need? If they invite me, asking me, sister, what do you need? Then I can say, I need lotion. But no one asked me. So I just endure the painful sensation from the crack of my skin. Then through this experience, after that, of course, everything goes well. But through this experience, I gain a lot of inner strength. Inner strength. Without lotion, my skin cracks so wide. I still can survive. I still be very happy. So from this, through the endurance of the pain arising from the body, I gain a lot of inner strength. So also the hunger, you know. As a nun, you know, we travel, like me, travel quite a lot, travel around in the world. And we are not supposed to take food after 12, sometimes after 1, depend on the country. Actually, it depends on the sun, not on the clock. So sometimes it's only not up to 1. But in this world, only few person understand our future. Not everyone understand. We are not residents. We are not allowed to take meal after 1 or after 12. So sometimes we went to some other country, they didn't understand our future. So they didn't give us food on time. So what do we do? Endure. We have to endure. Endure with the hunger. Or sometimes, because they take in the evening, they take dinner. So they don't understand we, without taking dinner, we eat more than what they eat. So we eat more. But they think the egg is so thin, they need to eat very little. So they also eat very little food. And they also eat very little food and say, sister, if you cannot finish, never mind. In my heart, I want to say not enough, you know. Those who take dinner will never understand, you know. Without taking dinner, we have to eat more than usual. But they cannot understand. And we also know, because we are not close to them,
You know, you feel so embarrassed to help. Even if it's a phone. Especially those who come from the poor countries like Burma. I remember one of my sisters, she went to Singapore. Burmese people, a lot of rice, very little curry, very little dishes, a lot of rice. Because they come from poor countries, they use a lot of sugar, so they have to take a lot of rice. So when this sister went to Singapore, you know, Singapore people, you know, city people, eat only little dishes. Rice and dishes. And sometimes they eat, you know, 4 o'clock, they eat 6 o'clock, they eat 8 o'clock, 5 o'clock. So they don't understand, they only eat 2 meals, some only 1 meal. So they eat a very little rice. You can take, I think, 3 per day this rice, and it's a very small portion. So when they came back from Singapore, it was so thin, emaciated. So this type of suffering we, as a monk and nun, we have to endure hunger. So I'm so used to this hunger. Now, every time when hunger comes, you know, I just contemplate hunger, impermanent, goes away. So now hunger is not my main problem anymore. That's why, that's how we learn from difficulty, right? We do not complain, we learn from difficulty. So now, even not eating hunger, no problem, hunger is also impermanent. It's just not then pass away. It's alright. So if you can endure cold, heat, hunger, then no vexation. Huh? No fever, no defilement will arise in your mind. And also, here says you must endure thirst. Huh? In Malaysia, we have one budget aeroplane. This aeroplane, but now when we enter into the airport, we cannot drink any drink. Not supposed to drink any drink. And in this budget aeroplane, there's also no drink. Because it's buy, they will not give you drink. Because we don't have the money. We also cannot bring the drinks together with the earth. So in the aeroplane, for many hours, you go to endure the earth. So, to become a monk and nun is not that easy, but that endurance gives you a lot of inner strength. Without water, without food, you still can survive. It's okay. But if you live in a very good condition, you know, you can get whatever you want, you know, you never face the hunger, thirst, hot or cold, then you lose the chances or opportunity to develop your power of endurance. And this power of endurance is very beautiful, very beautiful thing. Okay. Then also, we must endure the contact with creepers, creeping things, such like, especially for us, monks and nuns, we stay in the forest, not in comfortable houses. So in the forest, a lot of creeping things, sometimes black, sometimes very black, very small black. And I remember one of my experiences when I was in Malaysia. In the midnight, I woke up in the midnight because my whole body was bitten by very small black ants, very tiny black ants, so many black ants crawling on my body. And this black ant, although it's very tiny, but when it bites, the skin immediately becomes insane. It's so painful. I never have been bitten by such black ants before. It's so painful, and yet I cannot feel them, because as a nun, we observe the precept of non-hearing. Now, so one by one, I pick it up. Now, the more I pick up, the more that black ant stings. Because I think he thinks I want to cut him, so he bites me even more. You know? And all my hair also black, the black ant also black. So it's very difficult to pick up the ant. So finally, I surrender. What can I do?
the only one who shows revealed loving kindness. So I sit in meditation posture and I fairly reveal my loving kindness to all this black stone. And I never think the result works so well. After I think 5 minutes only, or 2 minutes only, the black stone stopped biting me. Then I keep on reducing until the end of my sitting. I don't feel any pain on my skin. One or two still bite me. But because my mind is, you know, I engage my mind, or I keep my mind just sending my loving kindness to all these black stones. So even one or two bite me, I don't feel the pain. Until now, those black stones never bite me. When I went back to Malaysia, when I was not there, the black stone gone away. When I came back, the black stone came back. But they only grow on the table, never bite me anymore. So this is how we endure, huh? All these creeping things, all these mosquitoes that fly with loving kindness. Okay, then reflect wisely. We also must endure ear spoken unwelcome words and other sarcastic. Here also, as a monk and nun, you know, or as anyone living in this world, blame, praise, gain, loss, suffering, happiness. Same condition. This we call Shloka Dharma, the eight winds. Everyone has to face it. So how can you endure this ear-spoken word? So whenever I heard somebody abuse me, call something, and speak something which is sort of unpleasant to the ears, then I quickly sit down. Same, radiating loving kindness. So the mindfulness must be fast and sharp. If not, the moment the abusive word comes in contact with your ears, the anger will arise. Unpleasant feeling. Unpleasant feeling followed by anger. So if your mindfulness is not sharp enough, first there arise unpleasant feeling, then anger. Then you get very angry. But when the mindfulness comes back, then you reveal loving kindness. You know anger is not good for you. So you sit down and reveal for my case. I sit down and I reveal loving kindness to this person who abused me. So I keep on reveal loving kindness to this person. May he be well and happy. May he be well and happy. Then very soon, my whole body is filled with happiness. When my body and mind feel with happiness, and I start to feel sorry for this person. This person uttered the ears, the heartbeat to me. At that moment, he is suffering from his anger. Am I right? He is suffering from his anger. Only an angry person will utter heartbeat. And I'm here sitting, radiating my loving kindness and full of happiness. So who is the loser? He is the loser. I'm not a loser. So when I reflect in this way, I feel so sorry for him. So from loving kindness meditation, I move to compassion meditation. By uttering this heart speak, he has to pay for his bad karma. He has to bear the bad consequences. So when I think that, oh, in the future, he has to bear all the bad consequences, then I have compassion for him. I arouse my compassion for him. May he free from all bad results. May he free from all bad results, and so on. And I can see the compassion arise in my heart. So this is how we endure all the ear-spoken words without reaction, without reacting with anger.
And also we have to endure the arisen bodily feelings. They are painful, stretching, sharp, piercing, and sometimes menacing to life. I remember another occasion last 3 years or 2 years when I was in Sri Lanka. At that time, because the climate of Sri Lanka is very humid, very very humid, that caused my a lot of blockage in my ears. And also because I don't have that cotton bud, it's not cotton bud to clean my ear for almost 1 year, sorry, 1 month. So my ear is full of the wet. Then plus the wet climate. So finally my ear was blocked. 2 ears was blocked. I cannot hear many people talk. Only very light sound. So blocked, and you know, as a nun, we didn't have the money, we didn't know how to drive car, everything had to depend on others. So I tell somebody that I have this problem, my ear almost blocked, you know, I need to see doctor. But the person didn't experience for me. So I endure again and again until one day I feel all the pressure, all the wind go into my head already. If I do not feel this one, I'm going to become crazy. All the pressure, all the wind go up, you know, I feel that. And so in such a bad condition. So finally, one of my sister, nun, who spoke for me, says she is in very bad condition, she's similar to hospital. So finally, I get all the wax removed. Then gradually, I recover from my sickness. So all this suffering, you know, we have to endure. Without endure, then we will give rise to a lot of anger, irritation, discontentment, and so on. So for a person who can endure, then they are not training, not vexation or fever in one to endure them. These are all the things that should be abandoned by enduring. And what most beautiful thing that I gain through all this suffering, through all this enduring? It makes my mind become softer and softer, more gentle, and understand other people's suffering as well. It didn't change my mind to become hard and rigid, no. Because all this suffering and all this enduring, no, it turns me to become a better person who understand other people's suffering even more. So this is a very good result that I gain through this endurance. Okay, the next one, the pain should be abandoned by avoiding. What pain should be abandoned by avoiding? Here a bhikkhu reflecting wisely avoids a wild elephant, wild horse, dog, net, and so on. This is only for monks, not for lay person. I will put only one thing for lay person. Reflecting wisely to avoid sitting on unsuitable seats, wandering to unsuitable resort. This is only for monks. And associating with best friends. This is applicable to lay person. Things if he were to do, so, while continuing in the holy life might suspect him of fever contact. While pain, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not avoid these things, there are no pain, vexation, and fever in one who avoids them. These are called the pain that should be abandoned by avoiding. So, avoid associating with that pain. It's very important to associate with that friend. What is that friend? How you recognize this person is that friend? By three characteristics. If he is a person full of grief, full of anger, and full of delusion,
then he is that's them. If we do not avoid him, that friend, if you do not avoid associating with that friend, as a consequence of their reputation, their name, and their behavior, also will be affected by him, by his sex behavior. So then a lot of feelings, a lot of refinements will arise in you. During Buddha's time, there was a king called Asyatasattu. Have you heard about Asyatasattu? The son of Nindisara. He associated with Devadatta. Devadatta is an enemy of Buddha. He always wanted to kill Buddha and took over his position. So Asyatasattu associates with this bad friend Devadatta. And one day Devadatta asked Asyatasattu, didn't you want to become king? At the time Asyatasattu is a king. His father is Nimisara. Then Devadatta persuaded Asyatasattu, if you want to become king, you should kill your father. Only then you will become a king. So Asyatasattu was influenced by Devadatta, and he put his father, King Nimisara, in the prison and tortured him, not allowed anybody to send food to him. And finally, King Nimisara was died in the prison. At that very day, when his father was died, was dead, King Asyatasattu's wife gave birth to a son. So when Asyatasattu heard a son was born, his whole body was filled with joy. A fatherly love arose in his mind. Then suddenly he thinks that, when I was born, did my father have this type of feeling or not? The fatherly love to a son. So he wanted to find out. So he sent somebody to a prison. He wanted to find out. So he quickly went to his mother and asked his mother, when I was born, how my father feel. So his mother explained to him how his father left him. Even though somebody had warned King Nimisara, this son is a danger for you. You better kill him now, or else you will be killed by him. Although somebody warned King Nimisara to kill you, but means your father never did that, out of his love for you. So when Asyatasattu heard about this life, he feels so remorse. How he ill-treated his father. So he quickly gives an order to release his father. But unfortunately, his father has already died. So after that, King Nimisara, his heart was filled with remorse. He cannot sleep, cannot eat, because of the remorse, killing his father. Then his minister advised him to go and see the Lord Buddha. So finally, he went to see the Lord Buddha. And the Lord Buddha gave him a sermon. I think Samana Pala,
salah kita, if I'm not mistaken. And the Buddha says, after listening to this discourse, Asakasatu was able to become Sotapanna, three centuries. But unfortunately, he had killed his father. It's called heavy karma. Huh? Heavy karma. Killing one parent is heavy karma. This heavy karma is without Vesi karma. Huh? This karma obstructs him that he cannot attain his sentiment. If he did not kill his father, by listening to this Samana Kala Sutta, he was able to become Sotapanna. But now, because he had killed his father, this Vesi karma become an obstruction for him to attain his sentiment. So what a loss for him. And not only that, after his death, he is found, he is sure to reborn in hell. Those who commit Vesi karma is sure to reborn in hell in his future life. So what a loss for him. Why he had to suffer such a loss? Because he associated with that friend. By associating with this spectrum, all the pain, vexation and fever arise in his mind, and he suffers the consequences accordingly. So for lay person, it is very important to disassociate with spectrum. In the Mangala Sutta, the first sentence is disassociate with spectrum. Associated with wise person. Mangala Sutta is very, very famous in Theravada country. So the first one is called blessing, the Sutta of blessing. What is the highest blessing? This associate with that friend is the highest blessing. In one of the Sataka story, Buddha to be Bodhisattva before he became Buddha. In one of his birth, one day he was given a bone, by Saka, the king of Seva. The king of Seva asked, what do you mean? I can fulfill all your wishes. Tell me what do you mean? Then this Bodhisattva said, only one thing. Disassociate with that friend. I don't want to talk. I don't want to meet. I don't want to see that friend. This only thing I need. How smart he is. He didn't ask for property. He didn't ask for wealth. He didn't ask for money. Because this property, money, only to be a small amount of happiness. But if you can hold of your life, if you can disassociate, if you never mix with the fool, never talk with the bad, never associate with the fool, what a higher blessing you have. So you only ask for this one. So it's important to choose the good friend. The good friend has three characteristics. He has non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. So you choose the good friend and associate with them, then you will gain a lot of wisdom, a lot of strengthen your morality, and gain a lot of insight. Now we come to the next thing. The thing to be abandoned by removing. What thing is the good to be abandoned by removing? Here a monk reflecting wisely does not correlate an arisen thought of sensual desire. He abandons it, removes it, does away with it, and annihilates it. Why should we abandon how to abandon this thought of sensual desire? How to abandon it? by reflecting the danger of them. The danger of the social, the danger of the thought of social desire. How? In the Magandhiya Sutta, Magandhiya Sutta of, I think, Sutta 75, if I'm not mistaken. Buddha gives an example. He says a leper, a leper with sores, many sores and blisters on his limbs. And because of being devoured by the worms, then cause a lot of pain, itchiness on his limbs. So he had to scratch the set of his wound with his nail. And also put his limbs on the burning charcoal so that his pain can get relieved. By doing so, actually the bad smell oozing out even more and the wound gets even worse. But this leper gets a certain amount of a certain mixture of satisfaction and enjoyment by searching and by then his wound over the burning charcoal. Only certain amount of satisfaction and enjoyment, but the wound gets even, the wound gets worse. This is the danger of sensual thought. Sensual desire only gives you a certain amount of satisfaction and enjoyment, but the result of it is far greater. You suffer more than the satisfaction it gives you. So if one indulges in the sensual desire, if one indulges more and more, then it causes craving arises again and again. And this craving, as we have already known, craving is the cause of all suffering. The second noble truth, the origin of all suffering is craving. So by indulging in the sensual pleasures, which give you only a little satisfaction, gratification, enjoyment, but it causes even more suffering in the future. So this is the danger of sensual desire. So by reflecting in such a way, then you can abandon this sensual desire, remove it, dart away with it. Then you are free from the pain. And now the question and fever might arise in you, in one who can abandon the sensual desire. And another one, a bhikkhu reflecting wisely does not tolerate an arisen thought of ill will. He abandons them, removes them, does away with them and annihilates them. So when ill will or anger arrives in one's mind, at this moment we suffer, because when anger is a mental state. When anger arrives in one's mind, every mental phenomena, every mental state can produce matter in the body. So this anger can produce four elements in the body.
Among these four elements, because of anger, the fire element becomes very excessive, becomes very strong. The fire element becomes very strong, then one soul turns to red. And because of fire element, then the wind element also becomes strong. Then the heart becomes very strong. And because of this wind element, sometimes your whole body, mind, system, out of energy. So at this moment, we already suffer. If the anger, we already suffer from this defilement of anger. And if one cannot control this anger, he might utter harshness or he might perform bad bodily actions to hurt somebody, to kill somebody, and so on. So in reflect, once this action was performed, any action, whether mentally, physically, and verbally, once performed, this behind karmic potency. Karmic potency. And this, when this karmic potency arises, we have to pay the result for this one. We have to reap the result. We have to suffer accordingly to our previous experience. So when you reflect in such a way, then the anger may cease in you. So you reflect, this anger will bring me suffering. And also, if I cannot control my anger, I act accordingly, then I cause suffering for others. And also this anger obstructs my wisdom. When anger arrives, you have no more wisdom. This anger obstructs my tranquility, obstructs my peace of mind. So I lose all my composure and so on. So reflecting in such a way, you should be able to abandon, remove your anger. Okay. And the next one, here, Bhikkhu reflecting wisely does not tolerate an arisen thought of cruelty. He abandons it, removes it, does away with it, and annihilates it. In the same way, that he reflects the danger of cruelty. When the cruelty is only a type of mental state. When it arrives in your mind, if you cannot do away with it, then you act accordingly, then sure you are going to kill somebody. You kill an animal, or you hurt somebody without compassion, and so on. So once karma performs, it leaves behind karmic energy. And also your mind is filled of, the harshness of the mind, the cruelty of the mind. And at that moment you lose all your peace of the mind, and so on. So you reflect the danger of cruelty. And if you have the ability, you should change the thought of cruelty, replace the thought of cruelty with the thought of compassion. Buddha said in one of the suttas, five ways to overcome the distracting thoughts. Vipassaka Santana Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. He said that when any defilement connected with anger, greed, and delusion arise in your mind, you should pray opposite mental state to overcome this anger, greed, and delusion. So when cruelty arrives in the mind, what's the opposite mental state of cruelty? Compassion. So you can also first reflect the danger of it, or later on you know how dangerous of the cruelty to you and to others. So you quickly replace it with compassion. Then the compassion may all be increased and suffering, so that you will not inflict suffering to others. Then all the issues and suffering keep on reducing this compassion to all sentient beings. Then you should be able to remove the thought of cruelty. So also the thought of ill will, the opposite state of ill will is loving kindness. So when the ill will or anger arises in your mind, you replace it with loving kindness. And may all beings be well and happy, so that you will not hurt other people. May all beings be well and happy. And how about sensual thoughts? Sensual desire? If you have sensual desire towards opposite sex, then you reflect the opposite sex. Why you have the sensual desire towards opposite sex? Because you see the beauty of them. The perception of beauty causes the sensual lust to arise, so that you should pay attention to the opposite state of repulsiveness, foulness, unattractiveness of the body part. We have told you to the good part of the body already. Or if you have the sensual desire to work in inanimate things, now your material, your property, then how to do away with this sensual thought or sensual desire towards your wealth and property? You should contemplate the impermanency, impermanency of all these things. They cannot belong to you forever. One day you have to depart from them. So you respect the impermanency of all these things and make things. This is how you can do away the sensual desire towards inanimate things. So he does not tolerate a recent evil unwholesome state. He does not tolerate all a recent evil, all the reason. So he does not tolerate a recent evil unwholesome state. He abandons them, he moves them, that's the way we think. While any vexation and fever might arise in one who does not remove this thought, there are no any vexation and fever in one who removes them. These are called the things that should be abandoned by removing. Okay, lastly, the things should be abandoned by developing. Bhavana. What pain, bhikkhu, should be abandoned by developing? Here a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, develops the mindfulness enlightenment factor. This is supported by secretion, dissipation, and cessation, and reference in relinquishment. How can one develop the enlightenment, the mindfulness enlightenment factor? In another sutta of Sangita Nikaya, under the topic of improvement, the Buddha said, things that are basic for the enlightenment factor of mindfulness. If a person instantly giving careful attention to it, it's a way to develop the enlightenment factor of mindfulness. So what are the things that are basic for the enlightenment factor of mindfulness? How do you develop your mindfulness? What are the objects that help you to develop your mindfulness? Four foundations of mindfulness. What are the four foundations of mindfulness? Number one, kaya nipasana, satipasana, contemplation body. Contemplation of body. This contemplation of body, including anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, is also under contemplation of the body. Then, 32 parts of the body, which I have taught you, head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin, and so on, to contemplate the 32 parts of the body is also called contemplation of the body. Then, four element meditation. Four elements that is meditation, you discern the whole body. This whole body, however it is posed, however it displays, consisting only four elements. Earth element, water element, fire element, and wind element. So again and again, from the top of the head down to the toe, again and again, you discern what earth element, fire element, water element, and wind element. This also called contemplation of the body. And another one is mindfulness and clear comprehension. Or iripata, iriyapata. Whatever standing, walking, lying down, walking, standing, lying down, and sitting, okay. Just four postures. You are mindful of it. Mindful of them. This also called contemplation of the body. And another one is called, I think it's called mindfulness and clear comprehension. Whatever movement, you stretching your hand, lifting up your feet, turning back, go for long distance, whatever movement you have, you're mindful of them. This also called contemplation of the body. And the next one is, I think it's cemetery, contemplate. When you die, your body was cast on the tunnel ground, on a cemetery. Then gradually the body, the corpse, bloated. Then from day to day, it changed. Bloated, then slowly changed. Then the womb, or the maggot, it's called maggot, come out from your corpse, come out from the corpse. Then gradually dry up, and all the special dogs come and eat all your, all your corpse. Then the whole body dry up and become skeleton, pieces by pieces, and finally become ancient. So you contemplate in this way. This also called contemplation of the body. This is the way how you can develop mindfulness. Okay, the second one, contemplation on feeling. Feeling, you have unpleasant feeling, pleasant feeling, neither unpleasant nor pleasant. And also the pleasant feeling associated with sensual desire. And the pleasant feeling is associated with sensual desire. For example, when one enters the jhana, it's pleasant feeling, but it's disassociated with sensual desire. We also have to contemplate this type of feeling as impermanent, non-self, So whatever feeling arises in your mind, you contemplate it as impermanent, impersonal, or impersonal. This is called contemplation on feeling. Okay, the third one, contemplation of the mind. We have saraga, citta, saraga, citta, citta, samadhi. We have raga, we have lust, greed, lust. Lustful mind. So when a lustful mind arrives in you, you know the lustful mind arrives in you. You know it's just a lustful mind, not a self, not a being. This identifies lustful mind as you or as I as myself. Just know it as it is. As a mental state arrives out of condition. Then you see it arises and pass away. So also anger. Anger, mind, delusion, wrong view, jealousy, whatever phenomena, whatever mental state arise in your mind, including law and proper, restlessness. We always forget to contemplate restlessness, law and proper, and so on. So whatever mental state, whether good or bad, arise in your mind, you just contemplate it as impermanent. It's not a self. It's just a mental state arise due to conditioning. Then let it come, let it go. This is called contemplation of the mind. Then the lastly, contemplation on the Dharma. This Dharma is very wide, including what we discuss now, seven factors of enlightenment. Then five hindrances. When five hindrances, you know five hindrances? First is sensual desire, second one, ill will, third, law and order, number four, restlessness and remorse, and number five, doubt. When these hindrances arise in your mind, you also have to contemplate it. Don't carry away by it. And don't identify these five hindrances as I, my, myself. If you identify with I, my, myself, then you react. Every reaction is flesh karma. Now every reaction in your mind is karma. It's a flesh karma. So don't react to it. No, there are hindrances, not a reason in your mind. Okay, watch it, observe it, let it come, let it go. This is called contemplation on the Dharma. And also, including when the six sense spaces, six sense objects in three six sense spaces. Then the factor arises. The factor of lust, the factor of anger, the factor of conflict arises in the mind, then you also have to contemplate it as cause and effect, as impermanence. So this is called contemplation on the Dharma. So this four foundation of mindfulness, if you frequently giving careful attention to it, then you develop the enlightening factor of mindfulness. Okay, number two. Here a bhikkhu reflecting wisely develops the investigation of the enlightenment factor. He develops Dhamma Vishaya, Sati Sambho Sangha. He develops investigation factor. Investigation enlightenment factor. What is this investigation enlightenment factor? How do you develop it? Investigation same as wisdom. So how do you develop it? So in this Sanyasa Nikaya, the topic of Muslim, the Buddha says, they are wholesome and unwholesome states. They are inferior and superior states. And frequently giving careful attention to them is the way to develop a measurement factor of investigation. So you must understand what is wholesome state, what is unwholesome state. Unwholesome state including all the mental refinements, like restlessness, revengeful, contentious, domineering, envy, deceitful, optimist, arrogant, negligent, wrong view, anger, delusion, so on. All these are unwholesome mental states. You must know they are unwholesome. If you think they are wholesome, then you have the wrong, you have the delusion. Then you also must understand what is wholesome. What are the wholesome states? Keeping five precepts are wholesome, generosity are wholesome, compassion, loving kindness, all these are wholesome states. So you must be able to differentiate what are the wholesome, what are the unwholesome states. Only then you develop the investigation enlightenment factor. And also you must understand what is inferior state, what is superior state. Any state connected with sensual desire is inferior state. Any state connected with jhana, which is dissociated with sensual desire, is superior state. Any state connected with insight, knowing, connecting all phenomena are impermanent, suffering, non-self. These are called superior states. So we must have the wisdom to differentiate what is inferior state, what is superior state. And also, if you can make a habit to examine conditioning phenomena when the opportunity arises. When the opportunities arise, then you examine the conditioning phenomena, then you develop the enlightenment factor of investigation. When you can examine the conditioning phenomena, you understand cause and effect. When you understand cause and effect, the perception of self, I, is abandoned. So that examining makes a habit to examine the conditioning state is very, very helpful to acknowledge, to do away the perception of self. So all these things are the basics for the, are the basics to develop the enlightenment factor of investigation. And if you can investigate these five aggregates, what are these five aggregates internally and externally, it also helps you to develop your wisdom faculties or to develop the enlightenment factor of investigation. Okay, next one. The third enlightenment factor is enlightenment factor of effort. So a monk reflecting wisely develops the enlightenment factor the enlightenment factor of energy or effort. So how can a one develop the enlightenment factor of effort? There are three elements of effort. Number one, the element of erosion. Number two, the element of endeavor. And number three, the element of exertion. So what is the element of arrival? This is immediate energy. Immediate energy, for example, immediate energy to meditate. You have the immediate energy to meditate. And when doing your meditation, you have the energy to keep your body erect, and you have the energy to control your mind, not to wander here and there. And you have the energy, immediate energy, to keep silent, not to talk unnecessarily. And you have the immediate energy not to sit for 1 hour and so on. This is called the element of arousal. And after that, you go to the second element, the element of endeavor. It's called intermediate energy. After you arouse your initial energy, then you must be able to sustain it. So you must have persistency. Perseverance, persistency, to keep on practicing. First you sit 1 hour, then gradually you can sit 2 hours, then you can sit 3 hours. You can put more and more effort to sustain it. Now you have perseverance and persistency in your meditation. Then later on, you come to the last effort we call the element of exertion. You put forth all your energy, the energy of full intensity to reach your goal. During Buddha time, there was a monk called, Sona monk. He was victim from very, very rich family. So one day, when he listened to Buddha's Dhamma talk, then he was so excited, he wanted to become a monk. So he immediately renounced to become a monk. But because he came from very rich family, his you know, all his body and skin are very delicate. So one day when he cried very hard at night, but at night when you do sitting, then it causes a lot of drowsiness. After 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, he cannot sit anymore because it causes drowsiness. And so now the two things: if I sit, then I'm sure fall into the floor and water. Why not I walk? So he do walking meditation. But because his skin was so delicate, after long walking, then his feet start to bleed, bleeding. Then he says, I cannot sit, now I cannot walk because my feet is bleeding. What should I do? Okay, why not I crawl? Crawling meditation. Now we have five coaches, crawling meditation. So because cannot sit, cannot walk, cannot lie down, so forth, a lazy person. He said because you want to put the element of exertion, the energy of full intensity. So he said, so he crawled, crawling, he did crawling meditation at night in the midnight. So at that time, there was a hunger, he thought, he caught a fly crawling, something is crawling. He thought it's an animal. So he took his arrow and took this object. And the arrow pierced his heart, pierced from his back up, from his back to the front. And yet, he didn't stop crawling. Still continuing doing his work, crawling and everything. Then finally the hunter realized he was a monk. He feels so remorse and helped him to remove the arrow. And finally, because of his energy, full intensity, the energy, the element of exertion, that he finally reached the answer. So how much energy you have compared with Sona Bhikkhu? So the more effort you give, so the more effort you apply in your meditation, the chances for success is open. Okay, this is the way you do develop enlightenment factor of effort. Number four, how to develop enlightenment factor of action. Things that are the basic for the enlightenment factor of action, or PT, frequently giving careful attention to them is a way to develop enlightenment factor of soul or action. So what are the basics that can arouse your reaction, your soul? For example, you can reflect the virtue of the Buddha. Buddha was endowed with 9 attributes. So you reflect, oh, Buddha's arahan, sama, sambodho, vicca, jarana, sampanno. You reflect Buddha's virtue. You reflect Buddha's wisdom and compassion. That give you a lot of happiness, joy, and respect. That joy and happiness and respect is very important to develop concentration. If your mind is not happy, how can you develop concentration? So you must frequently give attention, frequently give attention to Buddha's, to arouse rapture by reflecting the virtues of the Buddha, or by reflecting your own generosity, your own faith, or your own morality, if you keep very good morality. So you can constantly reflecting your own morality, your own generosity, or the virtues of reflection that arouse your rapture. Then you can develop the enlightenment sector of practice. It's very important. Buddha constantly says, joy because of joy. Joy leads to happiness. The happiness leads to concentration. And concentration leads to wisdom. So in your meditation, you must try to arouse your soul. Okay. And number six, the enlightenment sector of tranquility. Tranquility, pasadi. Pasadi, pasadi, samosanga. They are tranquility of body and tranquility of mind. If you can frequently give careful attention to the tranquility of body and tranquility of mind, it's a way to develop the enlightenment sector of tranquility. Okay, because time is running out, so I will go fast. Number six, the enlightenment sector of concentration, samadhi, samadhi. The enlightenment sector of concentration. So here a monk reflecting wisely develops the enlightenment sector of concentration. How he develops the enlightenment sector of concentration? They are things that are basic for the enlightenment sector of concentration. If a one is only giving careful attention to it, it's a way to develop the concentration sector at the enlightenment sector of concentration. So what is that? What is that? The sign of concentration. Nimitta. For those who practice anapana, they have the nimitta. This nimitta we call samadhi nimitta. It's called the sign of concentration. This nimitta appears, firstly, it appears like grey color. In front of, maybe a little bit far away, but the closer, the better. So first grey color, when the concentration returns, it becomes white color, like cotton wool. Then first grey color is called parikrama nimitta. When concentration returns, it becomes white color, we call ugaha nimitta. Learning time. And your concentration becomes deeper and deeper, it becomes brilliant, like diamond, very bright. And very clear, under the nose, not far away. Far away, you cannot say minuta. Only under the nose here, around the nose here, is called minuta, the sign of concentration. So the third minuta is called Patibhaga minuta, counterpart of sun. It appears like a diamond, like morning star, or like sun, very brilliant sun. Different persons have different types of nimitta. One person's nimitta may not same with another one. So if you listen to others' nimitta, I didn't experience the same, you don't think that you are wrong. No. Because nimitta come from our perception. Each person has their own perception. So each person will experience different type of nimitta. But the nimitta must be under the nostrils, light, bright, the best is come out together with the breath. Come out, the light come out together with the breath. This is the real nimitta, the 100% nimitta. So this samadhi nimitta, if you can develop this samadhi nimitta, then this is the way to develop another sector of concentration. Of course, this what I speak here is only anapanasati. Other samatha meditations have their own samadhi nimitta. What I mentioned only anapanasati. Other types of meditation have their own way of nimitta. Not this one. So if you can frequently giving attention to your samadhi nimitta, Whatever of the four example skeleton meditation. What's the meaning of the skeleton meditation? It's the skeleton itself. The skeleton itself, the skeleton always appears in your mind and it becomes your meaning. So if you can always frequently give attention to this skeleton meditation, when you are practicing skeleton meditation, then this is a way to develop your enlightenment sector of concentration. Okay, lastly, how to develop the enlightenment sector of equanimity? Equanimity. So they are the basics for the enlightenment sector of equanimity. Frequently giving pleasure attention is the way to develop the enlightenment sector of equanimity. The basic to develop is to reflect karma. Karma, we are the heir of our own karma. We are born from our karma. Karma is our heritage. Karma is our heir, our heritage. Whatever good or bad I encounter is my karma. So if you can reflect in this way, it's one way to develop the enlightenment sector of equanimity. Or when you pay attention to the object, when you pay attention to the object of your observation, your mind neither clings or rejects. Your mind is in balance. You pay attention to the object with equanimity, neither clings nor rejects. This is also the way you can develop the equanimity, the enlightenment sector of equanimity. So, while pain, vexation and fever might arise in one who does not develop this enlightenment sector, there are no pain, vexation or fever in one who develops them. These are called the things that should be abandoned by developing. And conclusion, decrease. Then for a bhikkhu, the terms that should be abandoned by seeing have been abandoned by seeing. When the terms that should be abandoned by restraining have been abandoned by restraining. When the terms that should be abandoned by using have been abandoned by using. When the terms that should be abandoned by enduring have been abandoned by enduring. When the things that should be abandoned by avoiding have been abandoned by avoiding. When the things that should be abandoned by removing have been abandoned by removing. When the things that should be abandoned by developing have been abandoned by developing. Then he is called a bhikkhu who does restrain with the restraint of all the things. He has several currents flung off the sectors, and with the complete penetration of conceit, he has met an end of suffering. This means that he has attained arahantship. He has become arahant. He has met an end of suffering by this seven ways to destroy the sin. Of course, among the seven ways, number one, by way of seeing with inside knowledge, is very important. And the last one, by way of developing the seven sectors of enlightenment, is equally important. So here the Buddha says, if a person can remove the things by way of seeing, then he becomes a Sotapanna. And lastly, if you can destroy the chain by way of developing the seven sectors of enlightenment, then he became Arahant. So this is what the Buddha said. When the bhikkhu all satisfied and delighted in the blessed one's will. So this is the end of the Buddha. Any question? Yes.
How to deal with it?
So your question is how to deal with it or anger? Antidote. It's mean the opposite of the fear. First, you must understand, to me, fear is something not happen. To me, you fear of something good is not happen. Am I right? Now, you fear of something good is not happen. So to me, it's very wasting time. Something which is not happen, how do you fear of it? But when it really happens, then find a way to stop it. If you cannot stop it, let it be. And that's the way it is. Antidote for me, it's the antidote to overcome the fear. It's so easy. And in my prayer, I feel so strange when I meet with so many lay persons. Most of the people told me that they have a lot of fear and worry. I remember when I was in the aeroplane, the way to Eastern Europe, I met one tourist from Iran. Then he started to talk to me. Are you a monk or nun? Or he started to talk to me. Then he said that I'm very, very weak. Very, very weak. But I have so much worry. I said, what are you worried about? I asked him, what are you worried about? He said, I don't know. I worry this, worry that, worry that. I think you are worried, you worry about things which have not yet happened. Things which have not yet happened to me is an illusion. It may not happen. You know? It may not happen. So what do you feel of it? I say that you are worried about things which have never happened. It may not happen. But if it really happens, then find a way to stop it. It cannot stop anybody. And this, your answer is so simple. Your answer is so simple, but I think it's very difficult to do. So I don't have special antidote for this fear. You can, you know, because I myself have very less fear, I don't know why. Very less fear. Fear of what, I don't know, you know. Then, if cannot, then you contemplate it. Fear is what? It's just a mental state out of my imagination. To contemplate it and do it away. Do it away. Remove it. If you can, of course. If you can overcome with your eternity, then it's fine. But to me, fear of what? Tell me, okay, this, can you let me know fear of what? This example, an example. Fear of what? I mean, this is really an example. The robbers break into your house, then nothing you can do. You know? So, then if one person, you do something good to them, do something to children, you know. Once you have done something to children, and if it really happens, you can't do anything. So what do you
do? I have two questions. So I can ask you a bit about the nervous system and why you can do it right. So I'm going to ask you about the nervous system. And then the second question is, when you mentioned about the diamond white light, do we have to go to that place to turn your mind in the hole? May we have the white light and just turn in? Because for my understanding, the light doesn't come when you expect it. It sometimes just comes out when you don't expect it. So, I
mentioned the light is just come, and you want to go in it, you can't. You must wait until the light becomes stable. This is very important, since first. Your light must be very, very stable, even if it didn't turn to diamond, or only white. Usually it will turn to diamond. Or not necessarily diamond, it will turn to brightness. So, this nimittam must be stable for at least half an hour. If it only comes, then it goes away. You can't. You can't have how can you enter, it goes away already. So you must wait until the light becomes stable, not shaking, not moving, not changing for half an hour. And it must be very close to the nostril, cannot be far away. So white light usually not enough. You must wait until it becomes bright. Not necessarily must be very, very bright. Just bright enough. Somebody very bright, somebody not. Okay. So if it's stable here for half an hour, sometimes it will reach a time that your mind automatically, without your intention, automatically your mind just go in. Sometimes. Yes, two situations. One is sometimes the nimittam is here last for half an hour already, and your mind so concentrated on the breath, not paying attention to this nimittam, and it will reach a time the mind automatically go inside the nimittam. It's very good, let it be. Okay? But for certain person, something will not happen. If it does not happen and your nimittam become bright and last for half an hour, and you also feel that if your breath and the nimitta like unified, two light and your nimitta and your breath two become one. Two become one, then you shift your mind to enter into this nimitta. So there are two occasions. One is with purpose, with intention. Second one is sometimes without intention, automatically. Okay, any other
questions?
I have
a
After you emerge from the jhana, then you emerge from the jhana, then you contemplate five aggregates. As impermanent, suffering, mantra. But when you have good concentration, your mind becomes workable, worthy, malleable. Then at the time you want to contemplate whatever aggregate in your body, it becomes so easy and becomes very penetrative. For example, now I ask you to see, the body is composed of millions of particles. Can you see? Now you close your eyes, see. Can or not? You cannot see. Why? No concentration. So concentration by microscope, Many things which we cannot see through our naked eye, with the microscope you can see. So also with concentration you can see things which you cannot see through your ordinary eyes. Yes, after jhana, not in the jhana. Because in the jhana your mind only sits on the one object. How can you concentrate now? You must immerse from it. Okay? No more questions, so we end here. So I hope you can come and listen to tomorrow's talk, dependent on the instant. With PowerPoint, please get ready the PowerPoint. Projector. Thank you for today.